Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello. Welcome back to Brett and Cliff Flea Circus. My name is Cliff and I'm joined by a chorus of drills.
Hello. Yes, that was exciting, wasn't it? I like that. I'm Brett. Oh, that's who I am. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, it is.
And how are you this fine,
I'm fine.
April day?
I'm fine. There's no drilling anywhere near me, so I'm quite okay.
I don't know what
I'm half expecting. Like the ceiling to come in your head.
Yeah.
While we're doing it.
Collapse on us.
I listened to a podcast on Friday whilst also watching Basic Instinct with the sound down. That was a nice experience. What a ridiculous film, Basic Instinct.
Were you alone?
Was I alone? No, the wife was asleep next to us. So I wasn't alone. But it was just insane. Completely insane. I mean, it's a long time since I've seen it. And when I was a kid, I don't know if I've actually seen it or just the good bits.
Yeah, I was thinking, is there a story?
Is there a plot? I'm not sure about that. But it just seemed exactly like Showgirls with the sound off.
Who's in it? I know Sharon Stone. Is it Willem Dafoe?
Yeah. No. It's Michael Douglas.
Which is the one with Willem Dafoe?
Is that's the Madonna one?
Is it? Body of Evidence, that's my favourite one.
Yeah.
The wax.
Is it? The wax. Yeah. It was weird when all those films were coming out at the same time, wasn't it? All those...
A lot of erotic thrillers.
Sex thrillers. Yeah. I call them sex thrillers.
Sex thrillers. Well, that's because you're a much more basic man. I find more a deeper pleasure in the eroticism of them.
And then when the Channel 5 put them all on late at night, that was a wonderful time to be alive, wasn't it?
Have you seen Sea of Love with Al Pacino and Ellen Barkin?
I don't think I have. I think I've actually got it somewhere. But no, I haven't seen that one.
That's a good one.
Is that any good?
Yeah, that's a good one. And obviously, I think Body of Evidence is actually my favourite because it was Madonna when I was a kid. But
yeah.
What about, what's the one with all the screens? Slither. Sliver?
Sliver. Is that about the slugs?
What's it called?
Is that the horror about the slugs?
Slither.
I've seen that.
What's it called?
I don't know. But once again...
Sliver? Sliver?
I've only seen the good bits. Is it about some hotel or something? I'm not sure.
I think it's also Sharon Stone. She moves into an apartment block where William Baldwin is like a nice guy, I think, but then he's got a big control room where he's got cameras in all their rooms.
All right. Yeah.
So is when there's a few people at work who have like two screens who think they're important and that. And all the time I'm like, I think you're on Sliver, do you? And obviously no one knows what I'm on about at all.
Do you also say that when you go into betting shops?
Sliver, eh?
I think you're on Sliver.
Yeah, I mean, it also happens if I'm ever in the control room of the BBC, NASA.
Anyway. That's why there's always those crumpled up white bits of paper at the betting shop, isn't it? On the floor. That's why. So yeah, I listened to that, and I also watched a film this week, which was a horror with Vincent Price in, called The Monster Club, and it was accompanied by music from UB40.
A reggae horror.
There was like, yeah, it's set in this club with all these monsters are, and in the background you can just hear UB40. It's weird.
Are they playing in the club? Is it like a monster band?
It's just mental. Well, there is other monster bands in it, but unfortunately UB40 aren't one of them. But there's other bands in there. It's a really crazy film. So I watched
when
that.
When is it from? The 80s, I presume.
81. Okay. 1981. Aye, so that was good. Like I say, it was mental. And I also listened to a different podcast this week, which we don't really talk about other ones. But I don't know if you've listened to this one. Paul McCartney was on that Adam Buxton thing. Did you listen to that?
I listened to that. It was about Christmas time when that came out, because I think I was buying Christmas cards and I remember it being on.
Yeah,
it was quite good. Like, I think the thing with McCartney is he always get the same stories, really, don't you? And every time he's got a new album, he remembers a new story from Beatles.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the thing that interests me about it was he was talking about like the television programs he liked, and he likes Homes Under the Hammer.
Yeah, no,
and American Pickers and stuff like that.
I get really into them.
He was talking about Vic and Bob as well.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? Because he had Bob Mortimer on. A different one.
I promised someone that I would say give them a bit of a shout out, so okay. I'm going to do it. Rafa, our friend, who is from Brazil, she sent us a message saying that she was walking down, and I'm going to say this wrong, I get wrong off the wife for saying Copacabana. But I'm going to say it. Anyway, Copacabana Beach, listening to our health podcast, and apparently she was laughing to herself as she was walking down that beach. So I'd mention that because I think that's a good thing. So yeah. That means that me and you have been there, really.
Yeah, doesn't it? Like Buster.
Yeah, exactly, like Buster. We didn't rob no trains, though, did we?
No, we did not. No. So last week and the week before, I told you about the plight of a mother bird who had laid some eggs and was
the shit pigeon
sitting on the eggs. It was a hopeless task. Anyway, lo and behold, there's now two chicks out there that I feel very responsible for all of a sudden. Two little furry chicken shit pigeon doves. So it's kind of exciting. The drilling's back. It's kind of exciting, but I feel a weight of responsibility on my shoulders as well.
And so you should. What have you done? Anything? Have you prepared anything to sort of look after these birds?
I took the dad out for a couple of pints, wet the baby's head,
as you do. And a cigar.
Yeah, and I give them some silver coins. I think that happens as well.
Is that what you meant to do?
And most of all, I've stopped the cat from going outside because I think that would be a bad move. I've genuinely assumed those eggs were never going to hatch, but here we are. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, I know nothing about eggs, birds, baby birds, and hatching. So,
but what's the end goal going to be, Cliff? I mean, can they stay there forever? That's the question.
No.
They can't, can they?
They need to move on, but I'm not going to kick them out yet.
They need to be fumigated. Right, I've got a few questions for you. The first one is just a normal question, and I was thinking about this. I was thinking about this in the week.
What's
not normal? I don't know, to be perfectly honest. Is there anything that reoccurs in modern films that gets on your nerves, Cliff?
Yeah, so almost everything.
Yeah, almost everything.
Yeah, the fact that they've got to go to a strip club in every film, no matter what it's about or what the job is or who they're meeting, that they've got to go to a strip club. That gets on my nerves.
I think that's taken from what we were talking about last week with Beverly Hills Cop, isn't it? I think they've just nicked it from that, pretty much. But what gets on my nerves is you watch these films and loads of money's being spent on them and stuff like that. And then it shows you like a family photo for like, you know, impact, for emotional impact. And it's the worst Photoshop photo you've ever seen in your life. I just, it annoys us. I don't know why that winds us up, but it does.
I think the technology for those photos should have caught up with in Hollywood.
I think they should have. So that winds us up. Okay. But I've got some true or false questions for
you.
Let's do it. Right. Harry Seacombe was once employed by the Metropolitan Police as one of those blue lights you see at a crime scene. Do you think that's true or false?
Seems too obvious to be false, so I'm going to say true.
I think it is true as well. I would agree. Donald Trump's complexion is due to a lifelong addiction to Sunny Delight.
Yep, true.
That is definitely true, isn't it? So that's good. Rocky Dennis created the term animal magnetism.
I think I heard it wasn't created by him, but it was used for the first time in reference to him.
No, it's false. It was John Merrick who created that term. But there you go. There's your true or false question.
Well, thank you for
no facts this week. I'll leave you alone with the facts until next week.
Okay. So, I mean, they were kind of facts because now I know which ones of those were facts.
Kind of. I guess so.
Moving on from Rocky Dennis, we're going to talk about Back to the Future, my favourite ever film.
It certainly is, yes. And I was over the moon to watch it yesterday.
I watched it this morning.
Didn't have a very good day yesterday.
You didn't have a good day this morning? What do you mean?
No, it was just one of them days yesterday. But this film cheered us up no end.
Okay, that's good.
It's just a joy, isn't it?
It is. There's nothing bad about this film at all, is there?
Yeah. It's nothing at all.
It's perfect. The story, the characters, the acting, the music, the way it looks, the jokes, the little bits and pieces that are in the background and all of that kind of stuff, the way it sets up the next one. It's all, I love it. I absolutely love it. And I always have.
Yeah, I know. And like I say, I know it's your favorite film and stuff like that. And I was watching it yesterday and my son came in and went, oh, what, you're watching Back to the Future? One of my favourite films. So he's got your genes. Where these genes have come from, I'm getting incredibly worried. he never said that when the goddamn thing was on.
No.
But when Back to the Future.
He knows what's right. He's a good lad.
He's a good lad, him. But yeah, it's a classic. And can you remember the first time you watched it?
I think I get a little bit confused because I would have gone to, I think when I was young, I've like mixed up number one and two. So I often say like two, I prefer, this is my favorite film, but I love number two. And I think that's because I went to the pictures to see number two when it came out. I remember going with my dad to Cannon in Sunderland to watch it. But I also feel like it might have been a double bill and this one was on first and then that one was on. Like, that seems unlikely, but I can't remember the first time I saw this one. I remember like both of them together are kind of like mixed up in my mind and in my memories. But it would have been around the time the second one came out. I probably saw this at home or on a video from Video Phil or whatever, and then and then went to see the new one. The new one at the time. It's just great, isn't it? Like, as a kid, there's so much that you would like about it as a kid. And the great thing is, when you watch it as an adult, it makes you feel like a kid again or makes you feel excited in the way that you were when you were a kid. So I think that's why it works for, like, generations.
Yeah, I think that's true, definitely.
What about you?
I think the first time I watched it would have been on the TV, on BBC One, I think, and I have a distinct memory of watching it at Christmas.
Okay.
Maybe it's Christmas Eve or something like that when you've got your pajamas on as a kid and stuff. So I think that was the first time I saw it. And I just loved it and I still love it now. but because it's amazing. I mean, Michael J. Fox, what a man he is. I mean, he's just so likable, isn't he? That's the thing. And I think people try to copy this type of film with not much, well, no success these days, do they? Because the characters, you don't like them. Whereas, I mean, like last week we were talking about Beverly Hills Cop and stuff like that. You just like Eddie Murphy, and it's the same kind of thing with Michael J. Fox. You just like him. He's a nice kid, isn't he?
Yeah, I think, and also like he's not like the super cool kid, is he? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because he's all right. Like he's pretty cool, you know. But you want to, as a normal kid, you think, oh, I wish I could do that. But also, his band isn't getting picked for the school dance and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And his mom won't let him go out overnight and stuff. So although he's cool, he's not like that untouchable level of like, the Zach Morris kind of unrealistic kind of cool character. And I think that's why it works. He's just really, really good. And like you say, having a bit of a dig at modern films, but most films now are like gritty backstories. So you can't even have like Superman or Batman being fun. And I know Batman was never really rooted in that, but you've got to, you know, there's got to be some kind of trauma that crawling over and getting to the root of. And if it's a biopic, you go back into the childhood when there was the dad was cruel to them or whatever. Like there's always something, and it's all from this. Anti-heroes became the big thing with Sopranos and stuff like that. Like anti-heroes were the new leading characters, which meant they're not really that likable. So, and kids' movies became like superhero films, which is also unrealistic, which is why I think that first Tom Holland Spider-Man film was so well received, because it kind of took it back to that little kid that it could be somebody you're at school with and all of that. And I think that's why these 80s films were so good.
They're like so nostalgic, aren't they? Yeah. I mean, you're right completely in what you're saying. Not everything has to be about that stuff, does it? Not every horror film has to be about depression. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm sick of watching shit like that.
Yeah, actually, it's not a monster. It's a metaphor for the black dog on the shoulder and all of that.
Exactly. Whereas, I mean, when you would watch these type of things, I mean, this is a family-friendly film, and it's just fun. And it's fun because you like the characters. You could imagine yourself being Marty McFly. You would love to be Marty McFly. He's got his flaws, and that's part of his charm, isn't it? So I completely agree, definitely. I really do.
So it came out 1985. Directed by Robert Zemeckis, written by Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, produced by Spielberg.
Yeah, produced by Spielberg. I watched the making of documentary, and he turns up looking like Phil Spector. Looks exactly like him. Exactly like Phil Spector. It's a bad look. It is a bad look. I don't know why he copied it, but that's the way he looked anyway.
So starring Michael J. Fox as Marty McFly. Christopher Lloyd as Doc Emmett Brown, and Crispin Glover as George McFly, and Tom Wilson as Biff Tannen, and there's a few other people in it. Billy Zane pops up, he's probably one of the other names that people recognize. Who's your favorite?
Probably Billy Zane's best role, because he doesn't speak.
and you would miss him easily.
He would miss it. Who was my favorite? Well, when I was a kid, obviously it was Marty McFly. He was my favorite. I loved him. But as you get older, I do like Doc Brown. He is the best mad scientist ever in film, I think, isn't he?
He's superb. I would say. So when you watch it, so he's a mad scientist who invents a time machine that sends Marty McFly back to 1955 in his hometown. Why, as you watch it now, like when you were watching it, you go, oh, I wish I was friends with a guy like that who could make all these mad inventions and stuff, and it would be really cool. But actually, how are those two friends? It's really weird.
Well, that's the fantasy element of it, I guess, isn't it? That you know, as a kid, you would love to have this friend who's a mad scientist, mad inventor. And he's also like this just mental, charismatic guy.
Mm-hmm.
You'd love that, wouldn't you? I mean, that's the dream.
Also, forget not being allowed to go out with his girlfriend for a night. There's no way your mom and dad would let you go to this bloke's house every day.
Yeah. I think one of the main reasons that Marty McFly's his mate is he's got the biggest amp I've ever seen in my life.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many bits, so many bits in the film that are like, just stand out or that are so funny or like yeah. stick in your mind. And it's uh-huh. from the very, very start. So it starts with an alarm going off and a series of machines.
Yeah.
You know, there always used to be these things on TV shows and stuff where like,
it's a bit like
a ball
Gremlins,
would roll down the
it?
Thing and yeah.
Uh-huh,
and it would like set an alarm off and that would steam would then melt mm-hmm. something that would drip into a bowl and that bowl would then press a weight down and it would flip up something and blah, 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 blah. And the yeah. end goal of this is that dog food comes out of a can and pours yeah. into the thing. And what you realize is at that point, the dog food is just overflowing. So it's obviously been yeah. happening over and over and over again. And he's not there and the dog's not there. Einstein.
Nah.
Einstein, who is a pup in 1955, which means at least 30 years old in 1985.
I did. I watched the sequel after watching the first one, and yeah, I thought, is that the same duck?
He's like a 30-odd-year-old duck.
It can't be the same dog, no way. But going back to what you were talking about at the start, those things are in there because everybody likes seeing stuff like that. Can remember those sets that you used to be able to buy that used to do things? I think they're like marbles
yeah.
or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mousetrap, I mean, that is
yeah,
Mousetrap,
yeah, yeah, it's amazing. So, like, as a kid, you were, like, fascinated. The fact that it was, like, robotics and stuff like that was going into it. It was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And then Marty McFly rocks up on his skateboard, lets himself in, starts yeah. lighting this amp up. It was so funny. The world's biggest amp. He's turning everything up to 10 and 100 overdrive mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So big. And then he's got a tiny little guitar. He has
yeah,
got,
it's like a travel guitar or something, isn't it? That's what it is. It's like, yeah. I think that's what it is, a travel guitar.
And he plays a big chord and blows the amp and he goes flying.
But did you notice one of the clocks? Because it pans and all, like you say, all these, I mean, it's like TikTok of time, isn't it? It's like yeah. the Pink Floyd song at the start. But did you notice the clock where he's hanging off the clock tower?
You know what? I didn't see it this time, but I have seen it before.
Yeah,
I've seen the clip. Somebody must have done a still of it or something like that.
Yeah. So there's like little clever bits in the film like that where it's pointing you in a certain direction. And it also sort of pans past this newspaper cutting and it talks about a big fire at sort of Doc Brown's house and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So what Doc Brown's done is he's burnt his house down to get the money so he can keep his experiments going and stuff like that. So there's like clever little bits in the film where, you know, it's sort of pointing you in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. I love that stuff. Because that's the thing as well about this film. That's just what I was going to say. It's really clever, this film. It's just massively clever, I think. I mean, we're jumping a little bit forward, but like you've just mentioned, he's banned and stuff like that. He doesn't get into a dance or whatever. I think it's Huey Lewis who tells him that he kind of do it as well, isn't it? And like a cameo at the start. But and then when it sort of, he does go back in time and meets his father, he sees the same thing that Marty McFly says at the start. Well, you know, I'm not confident. No, what if they don't like it and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. And Marty McFly's dad's writing these stories and he says exactly the same thing. It's just clever writing, I think, mm-hmm. in that way. And that's just one of the ways that's clever, I think. I think it's clever loads of ways.
Yeah. And especially when you think that they obviously already knew what was going to be happening in the second one. Because there's so many nods to that in this as well, that they're weaving in the potential storyline for a sequel into these ones. So these little Easter egg kind of things come to come to roost like later on in a different film, even like not even in this one.
That's true.
It's so good. So you've got, I mean, this is the opening. Those machines, big amp. Then Doc Brown rings him. He says, you need to be somewhere at 1 a.m. I've got something to show you. Then he realizes the clocks are all 25 minutes out of time.
That's slow, aren't they?
And so he has to hot foot it to school. So he gets his skateboard. He's hanging off the back of a pickup truck as it makes its way there. As a kid, you watch that going, oh my God, how cool is that? While Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News is playing. Oh man, it's so cool. Like the beginning, it's just so, so good. There's not like as a little boy or as a grown up man, it just nails all those things.
It gets you.
Like, it just nails everything.
Gets you straight away.
It does. And then you also, when do we see George McFly for the first time?
I think that there's a good setup after, I think it may be after he's been to school.
Yeah.
And after he's been sort of denied for the band competition or whatever for the dance, there's this really good bit where they're setting everything up, where the family are just sitting down having something to eat, I think, isn't it? And it sets like everything up in the film, like how his parents met and stuff like that.
Biff.
How his sister, how his sister can't get a boyfriend, and how his brother is working in McDonald's or something like that as well. So just Biff as well, Biff's there, isn't he? So it just sets everything up.
And it sets up the character of George McFly, Marty McFly's dad, played by Crispin Glover, who for me is the best part of this film, really. Like, this performance. Could you ever get another actor to do this that he does? Like,
well, they did try.
Well, they did try.
Sequel,
much to, well, he sued them.
He sued them, and he sued them and won.
But it's, I don't, if anybody knows anything about Crispin Glover now, it's that he's a weirdo or he's an oddball and he does, he's really off the wall in books and spoken word. And the last film I saw him in was years and years ago, and it's about like all these spiders. That it's like a kind of creepy horror film, and it's this weird house. I can't remember the name of it. I remember talking to you about it at the time.
I think I know what you mean.
But anyway, he's gone off. He went off the like mainstream list instantly after this film.
Yeah.
Despite being the third or fourth biggest, like, well, the third main character in it. It's the weirdest, funniest, best oddball performance of anyone I've ever seen in my life. It makes it the film. Marty McFly can be as cool as he likes. Doc Brown can be as like this mad scientist character as much as he wants. But if it wasn't for the way that he plays George McFly, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work as well as it does. It's so good. The bit where they're watching TV on this bit where he goes home and Marty's a bit like, fucking hell, me family are weird as fuck. His dad's like just laughing his head off at these old TV shows, but he's like not laughing. He's like smacking the table.
I know. It's like
nobody's taking any notice of him. Like everybody else is just trying to have their dinner.
It is. I mean, I quite like Crispin Glover, actually. I've seen him in a couple of things. I think he's in Dead Man for a little bit, and he's like really weird in Dead Man when he's sitting on the train. And I think he's in something called American Gods, which is quite a new-ish TV series, so he's in that. But I think the reason that he sort of fell away a little bit is if you make any kind of ructions in Hollywood for whatever reason, they tend to put you on the back burner straight away, don't they? And that's obviously what he's done. But I mean, that's another clever bit about the film, because Marty McFly's got to go back in time to get his parents back together, and you don't want to make that easy, do you?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's got to be difficult, and that is the reason it's difficult, because his dad's such a oddball, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he ends up back in time by accident, doesn't he? Because it goes from this like cool, really cool opening, this family scene where you see this kind of weird family dynamic, and the dad is this pushover, that Biff Tannen, his boss is like kind of beating him down all the time, I'll run it on over in the morning and all of that kind of stuff. And then you get to the bit where he goes to meet the doc at 1:15 a.m. in this car park, And the doc's like, yeah, built a time machine out of a DeLorean. So here's another bit that's going to get every young lad going. A time machine out of the coolest looking car I've ever seen. That's got loads of like blue electric coming off it and all that stuff and flames when it goes fast, like superb.
Yeah.
And then some terrorists arrive. You're like, what? Is now it's suddenly scary?
Hello, Libyan terrorists. I mean, and that car as well. That it was kind of a joke, that car, wasn't it, at the time?
I don't know whether it was at that point or it became afterwards. So I know that the it's like
surely this folly, film must have elevated the DeLorean's status in everybody's mind. Because I remember looking, because Lennon's a big fan of this film, so I remember looking to see how much the cost DeLorean's now, see how much they would buy. And they were like $3,000. There wasn't any in the UK at all, in America, but there weren't that much. You could have gotten one.
I was saying we could get one if we wanted. We could feasibly save up that money.
All right. I thought you had seriously.
You think I would have turned one down if I could have got one?
I mean, have you ever seen one in real life? I haven't.
No, I don't think so.
No. I mean, I think there's a documentary about the guy who made them.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
On BBC, because they were made in Northern Ireland or something like that, wasn't there? I haven't actually seen the documentary, but would you say that this is the coolest car in any film? Because, I mean, there's loads of cool cars, isn't there?
It is for me. It absolutely is. Like, ahead of any Batmobile or anything like that. Absolutely. I was going to say, Marty McFly ends up having to flee the Libyans who are shooting at Doc Brown, because what's happened is he's stolen nuclear plutonium from them in order to fuel the charge that this car needs to go through time. And he told them he was going to make them a bomb with it. He's like, yeah, they'll never know. I'll just give them an empty case of a bomb. So you also got here that Doc Brown, no wonder he's an outcast, because he's quite happy to deal with Libyan terrorists and make them bombs.
doesn't care, does he?
It's totally sinister. and you just like it's what Doc Brown is and what he stands for and what he's done with his life. I don't even want to scratch the surface on it because it's weird.
But the only thing he cares about is his experiments, doesn't he? That's the only thing he cares about. So it doesn't matter who he upsets or who, even if they're terrorists, even if they're Libyan terrorists, he's still going to just do it because he wants his experiments there, just like the burning of his house. Mm-hmm. That's why he's done that, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Marty McFly ends up trying to speed away from the terrorists in the DeLorean. And he goes, oh, let's see if he can catches at 90. And then as he gets towards 88 miles per hour, which is the magic number that this car time travels, he's like, oh, shit, if this works, I'm going to go back in time. And the time set for 1955, which is when Doc Brown's like, this date, I put it in. That's when I came up with the idea for the thing that powers
flux capacitor,
which is what powers this and makes time travel possible. That's the day I did it. So he ends up going back to that time, and this again. So one of the reasons I love this is like the future. That's great, all of that stuff, the skateboard, the music, but also this bit in the past, like when I was 10, 11 or whatever. I used to love like Elvis and Buddy Holly and Dionne the Belmonts and all that stuff. And we're talking, he's going back to 1955, right? So he's in this, the style of it, the look and feel of it, the milkshake bars and all of that stuff, the cars, the outfits.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. And it's like proper Technicolor kind of feel when he goes back to it. It's so good when he gets there. And this is where it's all of the next hour or so. It's just total setups of mistakes, miscommunications, like misidentification. You got the wrong man, and she starts fancying him, and the dad gets beat up, and Biff. It's just everything's going wrong because he gets in the way of his mom and dad meeting for the first time, and then getting together, going to the dance where they met, and then him and his siblings are born. He ends up fucking it up because he lands himself in the middle of it, and the mom starts fancying him, and he fancies the mom because the first time he sees her, he almost says, "You're so hot," and he stops himself.
He does almost say that. But I was very similar to you. I think I must have watched this when I was a little bit younger than you. And I'm a sucker for an American diner. I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. If I see one, I've got to go in.
Do you remember the one that was in Newcastle?
That's because of this. Yes, I think so. Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing. There was one in Shields as well. There was a drugstore in King Street in Shields. You remember that? It was like an American diner with like all like red boots and all that stuff at the back.
Yeah.
They're very long. But yeah, same. Love it.
That's awesome. And that's definitely for this film. But I remember on a different podcast that me and you did, I think this is the first time that I properly heard like rock and roll.
Mm.
I mean, that bit at the end where he's playing the guitar and stuff like that. And I just thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. Him playing that guitar and, you know, just playing it so well. And I just thought Marty McFly was like the coolest ringing a bell. Person.
He's got this picture of him and his brother and sister in his pocket, and the less likely it is that his mom and dad are going to get together in this film, the more they're basically being erased from this picture one by one. And that's his race against time. There's two races against time. Uh-huh. One is that, and one is the only way that they can power the car to get back to 1985 is by managing to hook it up to a lightning strike that's going to strike on the clock tower of the town hall at this specific time. And they're going to harness the energy from the lightning. It's got to make a connection at the right time. And if that happens, then it'll give them enough kick to get back to.
Yeah, that's right. Which is brilliantly set up at the start of the film by someone giving them a leaflet.
Yeah.
You know, to say, which he has on him when he goes back to 1955. Mm-hmm. So there's these excellent, just brilliant bits where it's setting everything up. And the other thing that I find brilliant is it's a kids' film. And I think you said 11. I was probably 7 or 8 when I watched it. I understood mm-hmm. what was going on, because Doc Brown's probably, Christopher Lloyd, is the best at explaining what is going on.
Yeah, he's good.
And I mean, the exposition or whatever, it's needed because it's a complicated time travel story for kids. But it just works. And even watching it back, I loved all that stuff where he's explaining everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you understand it, like I say, because otherwise, if they didn't do that, one, Doc Brown wouldn't be as good as he is because he explains it in such a dramatic and sort of over the top way. But you, like I say, you wouldn't have a clue what was going on if that didn't happen.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And, you know, it is needed, and probably isn't anyone better doing it than that.
So basically,
he does end up trying to come up with a plan to get his mom and dad to get back together. He's going to get them to, he's going to try it on with the mom in the car, but he's going to go too far. And George is going to notice that, come and knock on the car door and say, "Hey, what you doing? Get your hands off her," and give him a smack and be the knight in shining armor. Only gets her in the car and she's like, well up for it. So she's well starts smoking and she's well up for it. So there's that that gets in the way. And then also Biff throws Marty out of the car and he's the one in there. And then he is actually trying it on a bit too much. So when he goes to knock on the door, it turns out it's Biff in there who he's terrified of. But greatest punch in cinema comes up after it.
It is a good punch. Lays him out. Lays him completely out, doesn't it? After his arms being twisted behind his back, which is the worst punishment. It's the worst thing that could happen to anybody, the arm twist, isn't it? Awful. So,
that happens. And then doing this, Marty McFly is one got to make that happen and get back to the lightning strike thing, but he's been locked in the boot of a car by Biff and his gang, and it's the band's car who are playing this Under the Sea dance, and the guitarist who manages to free him hurts his hand in the meantime by getting him out, and he has to step in on stage and play the guitar for him to make the dance happen. So his mom and dad kiss each other at the dance, and it's the best bit of music in a film Like, nothing can beat it. He's playing Earth Angel with the other guy singing.
Yeah.
And then he gets the chance to sing Chuck Berry, Johnny B. Goode. This is kind of an oldie where I'm from. Kids are going to love it. All of that kind of stuff. And again, it puts him in like this cool, because he's very cool. He starts playing Johnny B. Goode and nobody knows what it is. And it's fucking electrifying. Marvin Berry, it's your cousin Marvin, puts Chuck Berry on the phone.
Hey, Chuck, you know that sound you wanted? Yeah. Well, listen to this.
But he goes too far and he ends up being like not cool again because he goes mad. He's obviously like takes this, what now is probably like a bit weird, but at the time it was very Van Halen, wasn't he? He's doing all this tapping.
Yeah.
He's rolling around on the floor and he's like screeching guitar, just gets far too carried away with playing Johnny B. Goode for this crowd. And everyone just looking at him aghast at the end.
I mean, he's way out of tune by the end, isn't he? Massively out of tune.
Yeah, he's really fucked it up. Like he was for 2.5 minutes. It's the greatest thing ever, and then he totally fucks it up.
Which is another brilliant part of the film, like part of Marty's flaws and stuff like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
gone too far.
I love that bit. Yeah, he did take it too far. But I mean, it's interesting what you were saying because it is a race against time, and that just ramps up the excitement, doesn't it?
Well,
the fact that he needs to get back to the clock tower to sort of harness the electricity and stuff like that. That's just it. And the last sort of 10 minutes of the film are just like blood pumping, amazing.
Oh, pure adrenaline. I've got excitement written down here because that last bit where he finishes the song and he's got to get there, get in the car, and the doc's trying to fit the thing. He can't get the cable together to get it and make it work.
It's amazing.
It's like second by second, you're getting more and more like adrenaline pumping, like, and the dog beanies over the top. Oh my God, we got to do it. We got to be and all of that kind of stuff. It's just ramps it up and it just, it's the film was on for almost 2 hours, I think, but honestly, it goes by in a flash. It's like every bit of it is necessary and fun.
Yeah.
There's like no bits where you're like, oh, I'll make a cup of tea at this point. Like, you just don't want to do
You don't look at your phone, do you? You definitely don't look at your phone while you're watching it. But the thing is about, you know, the genius of this film is it doesn't matter how many times you've seen it. That end is still exactly the same. It still gets you going and it's still, like you say, it's proper adrenaline ride and stuff like that. It's the same. Doesn't matter if it's the first time that you've watched it or the 20th, you still feel like that. And in fact, all the way throughout the film, you, like you said as well, you feel like a kid again when you're watching it. And I don't think, you know, there's no better film that makes you feel like that, is there?
I just love it. And then, you know, he does get back to 1985. He wakes up and he's like, oh, what a shocking, what a nightmare that was. And then he comes back and he's altered the course of history. His mom and dad are cool. They've got a nice house.
Yeah.
Biff's washing the car instead of telling his dad what to do. And he's got a nice big truck and his mom's happy for him to go out to the lakes with his girlfriend. It all's great. And then Doc Brown turns back up in his car in future clothes. We've got to go back to that. You've got to come with me back to the future. It sets up the next film. And also, the greatest ending of any film.
it's a brilliant ending. It's your greatest.
Yeah, it's your for greatest. Me. Like, that's what I've said that to about pretty much every part of the film. Like, this is why it's my favorite film.
Yeah.
Comes in a car. You've got to come back to the future with us in 30 years' time. You've got to come and see us. Your kids are a nightmare. You both come. And he's like, you're never going to get 80 miles an hour by the end of this road. And then the immortal closing line of the film.
Who needs roads?
Roads?
Yeah.
Well, we're going. We don't need roads. And he pulls down his big silver reflective future shades. And the car takes off and then flies to the screen. And it's the end. It sets up the next film perfectly. So good.
Right, so we'll have a quiz called Language Timothy.
Yes.
This is about 80s, 90s rap. Some of them aren't rap.
Okay.
But I'm going to disguise my voice. And I haven't practiced disguise me voice, so I don't know what it's going to sound like. Now, we both know that me and you, Clifford, are very good at interrupting each other. So if you could wait till I've finished, right, for the boys and girls at home, is that all right? Before you butt in with your answers.
Yes.
Okay. Right, first one. All right, Aldo. Sound as a pound. I'm Kushtila, but there's nothing down. What song's that?
Yeah, are you finished? Okay.
That's it, yes.
It doesn't sound like a rap song to me. Sound very Geordie.
It is. It is a rap song.
Okay. Like an American rapper.
Shall I just say the words after?
No, I don't.
After the stupid voice.
So like Kushti and Aldi, it only cost a pound. Is that what you said?
Right. No. Is that a name of a song?
Is it? Is it More Money, More Problems?
No, it was the Anfield Rap.
Oh, that one. Okay. Oh, my daughter's coming in. And then, hi. Well, I get interrupted by baby chatter.
Anyway, that's all right.
Go on.
How was the voice?
I loved it. Is it going to be the same voice for everyone?
Yeah, I don't have any other voice.
Okay.
Next one. Raw and pure like sushi. Don't try to do me, use me, or even try to sue me.
Is it something by Old Dirty Bastard? Is that a guy? Is it him?
No. 80s, 90s rap.
Anyway, I'll give one final go at that. Is it Fuck That Police?
No, I wouldn't have anything so vulgar in the quiz. You know that. It's PJ and Duncan. Let's get ready to rumble that one.
Okay.
Right. I think you might get this one. I'll do it slower. Detective man, I see. See daddy me, snow me, stab someone down the lane, a licky bum bum down.
Okay, I think that's Fight the Power by Public Enemy.
No, it's Informer by Snow. Did you not get the licky bum bum down bit?
I did, really, yeah.
No, you didn't. Next one. There's only two more to go before my voice goes.
Okay.
You're my doll, rock and roll. Feel the glam and pink. Kiss me here, touch me there. Hanky panky.
Is it Dear Mama by Tupac Shakur?
I'm afraid that one is Barbie Girl by Aqua.
Okay, does that fit in the genre of rap?
I said some of them aren't rap.
Oh, okay. I'm getting confused then.
Getting confused. Last one. I would like you on a long black lead. You can bring me all the things I need. Sex dwarf.
I think that might be... is it Hypnotized by the Notorious B.I.G.?
It's Sex Dwarf by Soft Cell. I thought you'd get that because I said Sex Dwarf.
I'm sorry, it really reminded us of the Notorious B.I.G.
No. So how do you think the rapping is? Do you think I'm good at it?
I think you are, but it confused us when you said it was rapping and two of them turned out not to be.
I said some of them weren't rapping. Yeah, I said some of them.
I know, but you. But the thing was, you rapped them, so I got confused.
Yeah, I can understand how that could be confusing.
Yeah,
now.
So, you know, I didn't do very well, but I won't take all the blame for that.
Don't think you got any right. Not even Snow Informer, which I know from experience is one of your favourite songs.
That's the only tattoo I've ever got. Right, so before we go, let's say thank you to everyone for listening and let's play the music for this week, which I think is absolutely fantastic. Brett, do you want to say what it is?
Yeah, we've got a Liverpool band this week called The Heavy North, with a new song, Darkness in Your Eyes. And it's a very good one.
It's amazing.
And I know you like this band, don't you?
I absolutely love it. I think one of the lads from the Mariners of the Coronations, I can't remember who now, retweeted them. And I listened to the song. Honestly, I really, really love it. My type of band. I'm going to, it's from the EP. What's it called? Dive Bar Blues, their EP. And yeah, I'm going to order that, I think, because it just, if this is what they sound like, they're right up my street. So yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, they're excellent.
Absolutely excellent. So yeah, to play us out, this is The Heavy North with Darkness in Your Eyes. See you later. See you later, future boy.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.